We're finishing up, as I mentioned, our series on the Ten Commandments this morning. And I think, if we're honest, for most of us, when we hear about the Ten Commandments, it's not because we're studying them or meditating on them. It's because there's some battle somewhere over whether the Ten Commandments should be displayed at some courthouse somewhere in our nation, and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. And as we've talked about throughout the series, it's a little strange because the Ten Commandments themselves are not so much laws as they are doors to wisdom. And frankly, today, we see that if indeed the Ten Commandments were adopted as the law of the land, we'd all be in some pretty big trouble. I think when folks argue for the Ten Commandments being our law, they're really thinking of the ones we talked about last week, right? Don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't lie. Although we'd still be in trouble, maybe. Some of us would still be in trouble with those. But then we get to number 10. Then we get to number 10. And we realize maybe the Ten Commandments aren't able to be legislated, because it's hard to legislate the desires of our hearts. Thou shalt not covet is a tough one. And frankly, it's tough for us, especially in the most prosperous nation that's ever been. And in the United States of America, we have mastered the ancient art of covetousness and taken it to a new level. Indeed, you might call these things that are in many of our pockets coveting machines. Yes. Yeah. I mean, all of these things are things that we might wish that we had more of. And when we open up our apps and we scroll through Instagram or Facebook or wherever, whatever we're doing, it's like all of people's best out on display for us to see. And we're thinking, well, wait a second, why aren't I smiling that big? Why don't I have this or that? Why don't my clothes and my hair or whatever look that good when I go out in the morning? And then we flip on the television. It's a box of desire. You go to HGTV and House Hunters and you see people, oh, we're just looking to buy our own island, or we're just looking for the, you know, and you're like, what am I doing wrong? Right? It is literally many people's job to exploit this thing deep inside of us called desire. Desire is a powerful force that fuels us and moves us to do all kinds of things, sometimes even dangerous and ridiculous things, so that we might have that desire, those desires fulfilled. And while we may have mastered this art, it is nothing new. Coveting and desiring is nothing new. We've talked so much about how the Ten Commandments need to be read within the story in which they're given. The Hebrew people who received the Ten Commandments knew firsthand the damage that covetousness can do to people. They themselves were the victims of a Pharaoh who sought more and more power and wealth than were rightfully his, and that desire came at their expense. And so as God seeks to create a new community, a new people, he gives them this command. Let me get there. Neither shall you covet your neighbor's wife, nor shall you desire your neighbor's house or field or male or female slave or ox or donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now, first, as we read this command, we have to talk about what coveting is. And I want to be clear, and you're going to see why, that coveting in this context, what we're not supposed to do, is unhealthy and disordered desire. And one of the clues that we have about that truth comes from the very words in the command itself. In that verse, is neither shall you covet, and that word is a Hebrew word. We're going to learn a little Hebrew this morning. We've been doing that every so often. The Hebrew word is hamad, and you've really got to, before you say it, you got to maybe clear your throat a little bit. It's right back here, so repeat after me, hamad. Very good. And then it says, neither shall you desire, and that word is avah. Can you say that? That one's much easier. And is much less dangerous for the people sitting in front of you, incidentally. So, hamad and avah. And these two words we find elsewhere. I haven't tipped my hand. Good. In Genesis 3, verse 6. You know what's going on in Genesis 3 is the serpent has come to Adam and Eve and is trying to convince them that they shouldn't listen to God's command not to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And it says this in verse 6. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that word comes from avah, it was a delight to the eyes, and that it was, the tree was to be desired, hamad, to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate, and she also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate, and the eyes of both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. So, we have a direct echo in this command of this story of the man and the woman not trusting in the wisdom of the Lord, and instead taking for themselves what did not rightfully belong to them. And we see in the story that this is devastating, not only to themselves, right? Their eyes were open, they knew that they were naked. It breaks the relationship between them. We see them blaming each other, but also it's devastating to others. Only a chapter later, it's Cain who covets the approval that God has given to his brother and kills him. And so some have said that the 10th commandment is really the root of all the other commands. If you don't covet, you're way less tempted to do the other things that God has commanded. Just for instance, the second commandment might not be so obvious. Don't make any idols for yourselves and don't bow down to them. Well, why would someone make an idol? Well, in this time, it was because idols were about securing your own fertility and prosperity. And if you're concerned, and if you're like, I don't know if I can really trust God to give me what I need, to be the provider that God has promised to be, maybe I should just, you know, hedge my bets and make an idol. It's a covetous act, is seeking your own prosperity that you're not sure that God will give you. Or, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Why wouldn't someone, really, and some days I wonder, why wouldn't someone want to rest? Right? Well, because we have a phrase, time is money, right? If for those of us who struggle to rest and keep Sabbath, we're worried about all the other things that we won't have or be able to do if we really take that command to rest seriously. It's about us wanting something that we don't have. And incidentally, you might notice that all of these commands have this economic dimension to them, right? And this is where covetousness comes in. Do I have what I really want? Do I have the resources to attain what I really want? And this is really tied up in the Ten Commandments because think about what a slave is. For a slave, their personhood, their identity is tied up in what they can produce and how they can profit someone else. Their identity is tied up in their economic value. And so many of these commands are about untying that identity and saying, you're not what you can produce. You're not about, you know, having all of the things you want. No, you are a covenant people. Your personhood is tied up in the covenant love of God, the covenant love that you share with others. So the 10th commandment is the root of the other commandments. But we need to be a little bit more specific. Because the command is not just do not covet, right? And so sometimes we even have our Ten Commandments up there, and as you all can read, the last commandment on the left side, I'm kidding, it's in Hebrew, it simply says, do not covet. And for the sake of space and brevity, we say, oh, the Tenth Commandment is do not covet. But that is not what the Tenth Commandment is it? It is, do not covet, a list of very specific things, particularly the things that belong to your neighbor. So the 10th commandment is not a command that says, do not desire. It is a command that says, redirect your desire away from the things that we're going to talk about in just a minute towards something better. Again, these commandments are not meant to be restrictive and constraining and oppressive. The whole point is that God has liberated his people from an external slavery in Egypt at the hands of the Pharaoh and wants to liberate them into a new way of living together. And so, what is this command really about? It is to not covet first what does not rightly belong to me. What does not rightly belong to me. And I would say that this command really, it helps put it into perspective when you think, go back a few years when there's slaves in Egypt. Is it wrong for the Hebrew people to desire to be free? Is it wrong for the Hebrew people to desire to be able to enjoy the fruits of their own labors that we talked about last week, rather than having to work for someone else's desire? Is that wrong of them? Are they desiring? Is their desire off base? No. If anyone is coveting in the story of in Egypt, it's the Pharaoh who has taken something and continues to take something that does not rightfully belong to him, namely, those Hebrew slaves. Right? So, it is what does not rightly belong to me. Second, do not covet what can only be taken at the expense of others. Do not desire what can only be taken at the expense of others. Is it wrong for you to want a new shirt? No. Might you want to think about whether your ability to have another shirt demands something of children in Bangladesh who are being enslaved and forced to work for your shirt? You might want to think about that. You might be desiring something at the expense that can only be taken at the expense of someone else. And that takes us back again to those commandments 6-9. And then finally, do not covet something that obstructs your ultimate joy, gratitude, and holiness. So for instance, if I am saying, I just want a bigger, more beautiful house with an indoor pool and with basketball courts and all these things, and to get that, I have to work 85, 90 hours a week at the expense of being able to sit at the dinner table with my family. I'm coveting something that is actually doing me harm. Or let's think of people who, again, who work all the time to provide for their own desires. Say they have enough. They work all the time and they're like, oh, I want a day of rest. Is that a wrong desire? No. It's something that God has commanded. If we're desiring something that God has commanded and God promised, our desire is in a good place. All right, so does that make sense? So we don't desire. Coveting, the 10th commandment is about desiring what does not rightly belong to me, what can only be taken at the expense of others, and what ultimately obstructs our joy, gratitude, and holiness. You see, in Genesis 3, that tree of the knowledge of good and evil, it's not bad. The tree itself is not bad. It's a tree of wisdom. Wisdom is the knowledge of what is good and bad, what is helpful and harmful. The problem in Genesis 3 is that Adam and Eve took from the tree instead of receiving the wisdom from God. And so our solution to the 10th commandment is not to stop desiring or repress our desires, but to redirect our desires and reshape them. And to illustrate that, I want to go to one more use of the word chamad, just so I can say it again. And this is in Isaiah 53. And this whole passage is about the suffering servant God says, I'm going to send this suffering servant. And in chapter 53, verse 2, it says this, for he, the suffering servant, grew up before God like a young plant, like a root out of dry ground. And it says, he had no form or majesty that we should look at him. Nothing in his appearance that we should chamad, desire him. And herein lies the issue. We desire all these other things, and yet the servant of God who has come for our salvation and healing, we don't desire. We actually get a little nervous around and back away from. And so what the 10th commandment does is it invites us to turn from those unhealthy and harmful desires towards a desire for the good and the beautiful and the true. As Paul puts it, those who live according to the flesh have their minds set on what the flesh desires, but those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. In other words, we reject, as Christians, those things that are ways of manipulating the world into what we want it at the expense of others and taking things that don't belong to us. We reject those things and turn to those things that God desires for us. We gaze upon God and God's kingdom. And this is not, I'm not trying to be super spiritual about this. I'm not saying you just sit there and meditate and say, oh God, you're so beautiful. No, it's the things that God has given to us and wants us to have. The material things, the spiritual things, the communal things. That is what we meditate on. It's about seeing the world through the lens of grace. That everything is a gift. In 1 Corinthians 12, Paul again is talking about the spiritual gifts. So he's not talking directly about God. He's talking about spiritual gifts. And he talks about speaking in tongues and various other things. And then at the end of the chapter, he says, now eagerly desire the greater gifts. What are the greater gifts for Paul? It's the gifts that benefit others, not merely the ones that benefit you. And he says, desire them. Covet them. Go after them. But you have to understand that they're gifts, not something that you can earn or take. And then, by the way, the next verse is, and I will show you a more excellent way. And the whole chapter about love is patient and love is kind and love is so on, right? So Paul is saying, covet something, just let it be the things that lead you into love. Now some of you might be asking then, but how can I help what I want and desire? That's a good question. Because it's not like we wake up in the morning and you're like, I really want to desire some unhealthy things today. I really want to seek after some things that are really bad for me and harmful to others. Right? And it can feel, and this is, I think, what makes the 10th commandment maybe feel very oppressive. Like, well, God, I can't help what I desire. And in the moment, that's true. But the 10th commandment is not like, and it's not like the previous ones. You're like, I can wake up and I can be like, okay, I'm not going to murder today. Like, I can do that, hopefully. I can not steal today. Okay, hopefully I can manage that. This one is harder. You can't just say, all right, today I'm just not going to desire. I'm not going to desire bad things. You can't do that. In the moment, desire, you can't change your desire. You just can't do it. But over time, our desires can be reshaped and redirected. At least those desires for things that are not the deep desire that God has put in our souls. And so the question then is, how, over time, can I live into and follow the 10th commandment? And there are three things that I would suggest this morning. There's more to be said. But the first is, we can redirect our focus. This is a practice that we can do day in and day out. And over time, it will shift our desires. Much of our lives are spent taking and consuming things that are pathetically insufficient to fill those deepest desires. And we have to realize our problem is not, I just don't have enough of those things. Our problem is that we need to focus on something different. And so in our focus on a daily basis, we can shift our minds. We can shift our thinking. We're going to talk in a moment about how to do that. But we can say, today I'm not going to surround myself with all of these things that bring up these unhealthy desires that make me miserable. I am going to surround myself with the things that bring me joy and peace. So we shift our focus. And Paul says it like this in chapter 4 of his letter to the Philippians. He says, "Finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things." Right? So he's talking about our focus there. What are we focused on? Second, then, related to that, is we can redirect and reshape our habits and our practices on a daily basis. So this is where things like fasting, the old tradition of fasting, come into play. So we talk about it during Lent a lot. If there is something that is making you miserable, if there is something that is stirring up these desires in you that are just not healthy, stop. Stop doing that thing or reduce it, right? So it's not that easy, obviously, but we develop practices like if I'm constantly on my phone looking at all the things I don't have, then I need to put some limits on how I use this thing, right? This is literally, the apps on our phones are literally made to addict us to it. They're literally meant to shape our brains. The things that go on in our brains, our neurons and neural pathways, all these things, they're meant to make us want more of this thing that does not bring us joy. There are people whose jobs it is to make apps that will rewire ourselves to need this and want this more. It's just the reality. Or even if it's something physical, like sugar, for instance. If I find myself, I'm saying this a couple weeks out of Halloween. I understand that. And there's a huge box, there's a huge box of lots of candy over there. It's to give away, people. It's for trunk or treat. But sugar, right? Like if I find myself wanting sugar more and more and more, then I need to find ways of reducing or eliminating that from my diet. And over time, for the first few days especially, that's going to be really hard because you are really desiring those things. But over time, your body actually wants it less. That's how we work. So we develop practices and habits that redirect our lives to the good and the beautiful and the true. And then finally, we surround ourselves with communities and stories that lift up the good and the beautiful and the true. That's part of what we do together. We come together week in and week out, and hopefully more than week in and week out, we come together to say, what is really good? What is really true about me and about God and about this world? What is really beautiful? And how can we surround ourselves with those stories and those types of people who are after those same things? Because in the end, we are surrounded by shiny distractions and empty promises and cheap substitutes for what is really good and beautiful and true. And the economic reality is that our economy has every interest in our dissatisfaction, in our sense of emptiness, and in our covetousness. The haunting question for me, at least, I don't want to haunt you, but the haunting question for me is that as we live in the most wealthy and prosperous nation in the world, how much of that prosperity was built on covetousness? In particular, a desire, an unhealthy and disordered desire that would overlook this very command and allow us to enslave people for our profit and our wealth. And how much of our current prosperity is built on people desiring things that they don't need and will not bring them joy? It's a sobering, haunting thought. I'm sorry I brought that to you just now. But I think it's something we have to think about because it is complicated to live as people who want to follow Jesus, who want to live out the Ten Commandments, in this reality where we're surrounded by this whole system that wants us not to obey the 10th commandment. But for us, what we're left with is the command of Hebrews 12, fix your eyes on Jesus. Redirect your hamad and your ava to the only one who can deliver on the promise of hope, peace, joy, and love. And then who invites us to ask questions like, how can I share? How can we share the gifts? Not how can I take more for myself? Because abundant life cannot be taken and it cannot be earned. That's why we sing Amazing Grace. It's a gift to be received that should inspire gratitude in us. So it is our work, no matter what we're surrounded with, distractions, it is our work to set our hearts on the good and the beautiful and the true. And if you want to start this week, you might start with this one little verse in Psalm 27, verse 4, that goes like this. One thing I asked of the Lord, that will I seek after. To live in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire of him in his temple. Sit with that. See what kind of gratitude that might stir in you. Then go and live a life of gratitude. Let's pray. Spirit of Christ, gently draw our deepest desires toward their fulfillment in you. Free us from the rat race of seeking fulfillment in that which will never satisfy. Liberate us to be people who rest in your grace, who trust in your wisdom, who rejoice in your love. We pray in the name of the one who came and died and lives again that we might have life abundant and free. Amen.